noted. The KVU Board of Directors will meet Tuesday, January 28th at 6 p.m. instead of Monday for their January board meeting.
KVU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Classical Music Confidential on Monday, February 10th from 11 a.m. to noon at the Central Library branch at the Multnomah County Library in Portland. Classical Music Confidential will be hosted by Bruce Charles and will take a look at Portland's secret classical music past of the 1940s. Again, that's Classical Music Confidential on Monday, February 10th from 11 a.m. to noon at the Central Library branch of the Multnomah County Library, 801 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Amanda Hill and I'm here with my co-host Jamie Partridge.
Hey Amanda.
Hey Jamie. Tonight our guest is Suzanne Sutherland, president of the Clark College Association for Higher Education, who just finished a successful three-day strike on January 13th, 14th, and 15th. Welcome, Suzanne.
Hello.
Woohoo! Successful three-day strike. So, for anyone who's been paying attention to higher education over the past few decades, you know that tuition is going up and full-time faculty is going down.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in college...
How long ago was that, Jamie?
Decades. 75% of the classes were taught by full-time tenured faculty, faculty who had decent pay and the job security to speak their mind, what we call academic freedom. Today, the great majority of the classes are taught by adjuncts or part-timers who are underpaid and precarious, and that's like without job security from term to term. So Suzanne, tell us about how that plays out on the Clark College campus.
Well, you're absolutely right, Jamie. At Clark College, we have about 65% part-time faculty, and that's compared to our 35% of full-time faculty, about 30% of which are tenured faculty. So yeah, it's about 2-to-1 at Clark College. Part-time faculty are trying to cobble together a career by traveling from college to college, teaching various classes with different textbooks, with different processes at the different colleges. So they're strained in a variety of ways. Not only are they strained in terms of having to travel from college to college, but they have different sort of different bureaucracies to deal with, different learning outcomes to meet in their different classes, different criteria and different policies that they have to follow at the different institutions. So while they're also paid anywhere from half to about 60% of what a full-time faculty member would make, they're also exploited in the sense that our institutions would not survive without them. Like, they can't survive fiscally without the part-time faculty members. And at the same time, they're being used to the extent that, like I said, they're being paid about half to 60% of what a full-time faculty member is making.
Wow, that's just like retail and healthcare, where they rely on part-timers. And I assume that the benefits package is a lot less with the adjuncts as well.
Right, yeah. So only a pretty modest percentage of our part-time faculty are actually benefited. So at Clark College, we have a certain number of benefited positions, and for those part-time faculty members who aren't benefited, they're actually kept below a minimum amount of credits to teach. So that's also another barrier. So if you don't get to land a benefited position, then you can only teach a certain amount, because the state of Washington requires that if you teach 50%, then you get benefits.
Wow.
However, the institution will keep you under that 50%, kind of like Walmart, so that they don't have to pay, so that they don't have to give that part-time faculty member benefits.
Okay. Well, knowing that, what were the main demands of your union going into the negotiations?
So our main objective was to get equal work for equal pay for our part-time faculty members. We knew we weren't going to be able to get it overnight, so we were aiming for equal work for equal pay over a period of, say, 3 years. So we were going for 3 years, and we ultimately landed at 72%. So our part-time faculty members mm-hmm. will make 72% of the starting full-time salary in 4 years. And that doesn't sound like a great deal, but it's a lot more than what they're getting now. And it's a huge, actually, victory based on how part-time faculty members are paid today.
Yeah, I would imagine it's pretty precedent-setting for colleges in the region.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the most part, community and technical colleges pay their part-time faculty members hourly. And just recently, PCC ratified a contract that pays their part-time faculty a salary. And they're also going to land at 70% in 4 years. Hmm. And like I said, we're going to be at 72% in 4 years. So PCC and Clark are the first in the region to do this.
Great. So tell us more about what you won at the negotiations.
Okay, yeah. So we also won competitive salaries for our full-time faculty members. We were significantly behind our K-12 counterparts, about 15% behind them, and then a good 10 to 15% behind our competitors at Mount Hood, PCC, and Clackamas. So as you could probably guess, it's difficult to attract good faculty and retain good faculty if we're paying 10 to 15% below what they're paying. So we believe that that's a big win to get our full-time salary up so that we could attract and retain the best faculty for our students. And then for the faculty who are already at Clark, that shows value for them, for their loyalty, and for their commitment to students.
You got something like a $10,000 bump, right, for full-time faculty?
Yeah, our top salary went up about $10,000, and yeah, our starting salary did as well. So it really depends on where our faculty were at on the salary schedule. Some of them received a $6,000 bump. Some of them got $10,000. So $10,000 was about the most. But yeah, we are super proud that we could get that kind of win, and we attribute it to the unity and the solidarity of our union.
Were there other wins that were non-monetary in this contract?
Yes. So we are being compensated for our advising. Not a great deal, but at least we're being recognized for the advising that we're doing with our students, and to some extent being compensated for that. We also are looking at more release time for some of our faculty members, and we'll be meeting with administrators to decide on some of that release time. Release time would be used for our faculty to do division and department leadership work, scheduling and whatnot. So it's only fair that you would get some release to do scheduling and to do supervising, to do things like ordering textbooks and whatnot.
I understand about with the adjuncts, because they're on the move, mm-hmm. they often don't have their own office. Is that true?
Yeah, so adjunct faculty don't have offices. They don't have a place to meet with students.
Wow.
And they often are on the run, on the move, so they don't have the time to meet with students. So while you'll have absolutely qualified, educated, and committed faculty members because of that condition of being an adjunct. There are so many barriers that keep them from being able to work one-on-one with students the way that they want to. And it's through no fault of their own that they're put in those sorts of conditions.
Wow. Mm-hmm. With your campaign, obviously you have, around 370 members at Clark?
Yeah, we now, I think we just hit the 400 mark.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're up to 80%. For a lot of unions, they're aiming for 100%, right? A lot of our unions are at 100% or 99%, especially in the K-12 in our area. However, when it comes to community college, our part-time professors are in and out. So a lot of times they won't become members because they don't know if they're going to be teaching the next quarter. That's another really awful thing about being a part-time professor is you can be released from the institution with no cost. And that could happen within a week and a half of the quarter starting. You could lose your class. So when it comes to our membership, it's a real challenge to get some of our part-timers to enroll because they don't know if they're going to be there the next quarter. And because their salary is so minimal, it's difficult to show them why paying those union dues would be a benefit to them. However, based on our last huge action, a lot of them are seeing the benefit and a lot of them have enrolled.
Great. I would imagine that played a big role in your ability to organize your campaign as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the campaign? You know, how did you find and recruit leaders and build teams, map your work sites with, so many people that are just in and out of that organization?
Right. So back in the spring, we were at about 180 members. So we had about 30% of our faculty were members. Hmm. And we had been negotiating for about 6 months, and it became really clear to me that negotiations were not going to go anywhere. So I started reaching out to our WEA organizers. And
WEA is?
Washington Education Association organizers, and inquiring about what we could do to try to support our bargain, to try to get us to the point where we could have some leverage. I was really inquiring about what would it take to go on strike, because we had so many members who were asking, why can't we go on strike? All the K-12 went on strike.
Yeah.
Those strikes resulted in salary increases. Why are we still 6 months later dealing with an administration who won't even offer us more than the COLA that the state has already promised us?
COLA is?
The cost of living adjustment that the state of Washington had already promised us. Our administration actually offered that to us in negotiations. It was very insulting. Anyways, aside from all of the other insulting things that the administration did, that led us to start inquiring about what is it going to take for us to have some leverage in the negotiation room. And basically, our Washington Education Association organizers told us, you need to increase your membership. And you need to form a team of organic leaders. Find those people who will influence your members, who will inform them, who will keep them engaged, who will, when the time comes, agitate them, who will get them out to our solidarity events to show each other and the public our unity and our solidarity so that we could have some leverage, like I said, in the bargaining room. So doing those things in unison, enrolling more members and then identifying organic leaders who could enroll more members, we finally reached this place of critical mass where it just started snowballing. People started talking more about all of the new members, so that attracted more members. And then we had our leaders out there in each one of our buildings who were talking to the people in their areas, letting them know what was going on. And soon it just sort of that momentum started building stronger and stronger. And then once we were able to communicate what was going on in the negotiation room, which was very little. And so that really kept our momentum going. And I had a pretty strong communication infrastructure through our website and through emailing and through our building reps. Our members were not only increasing, but they were getting all of the information that they needed to get on board with this movement. And I think that was a really important part of our success, was actually turning our narrative into a movement. So our narrative was, hey, look, we're trying to help our members who are the least powerful. So the members who had the least power in our membership are our part-timers. And in getting that movement rolling, that also picked up more members, which also contributed to our momentum. So all of those things built together built on each other to create our movement, which ultimately resulted in a unanimous strike vote.
Right, so on. Were you talking strike the whole time that you were signing up members?
Not necessarily. With our building reps, mm-hmm. I think that they were cognizant enough to know that depending on who they were talking to, they really had to tailor their message based on how the readiness of the various members. So brand new members who were brand new to Clark, mm-hmm. yeah, they probably weren't ready to talk about strike. But those who had been around for a long time, they needed to hear strike to stay involved. Mm-hmm. So it was really about finding those really strong leaders in the different areas who knew who they were talking to and who could make sure to tailor their message based on their audience. That was probably the most important piece of our organizing, was the building reps. Mm-hmm.
So if you just tuned in, this is Labor Radio KBOO Portland, and we're talking with Suzanne Sutherland, the president of the Clark College Association for Higher Education.
That's a long name.
It is. CCAHE.
There we go. So can you tell us what kind of tactics you used to move the administration, aside from the strike, obviously? Mm-hmm. What other tactics did you use?
To be honest with you, we tried everything. We tried packing the board meeting. We tried rallies. We tried marches. We did letter writing campaigns. We did a sick out once where we had a professional development day that we all said, hey, we're going to take a personal day. And we all met in the park and had speakers from different unions come. And we did all of these different actions over the course of about a year. And none of them really moved the administration at all, which really helped our organizing efforts. That lack of recognition of faculty and recognition of what we were trying to get for our members really solidified the need to actually do something significant. And it wasn't until we passed our strike vote unanimously that the administration actually started moving, but they just didn't move quite enough.
They just didn't take you seriously.
No, they still didn't take us seriously. Even after that, even after our vote, they still they didn't take us seriously. You're right.
So when you were thinking ahead, did you set up a campaign with, like, you know, this month we're going to do this, the next month we're going to try that, next month we're going to try something else, in kind of an escalating pattern? Or did you go by fly by the seat of your pants, not knowing what you're going to do next? Or?
Well, I was mostly focused on membership and building our membership.
So all the time that you were doing these different actions, you were building membership.
Yes.
And people were being attracted through these actions.
Exactly. So most of our actions were around what the Board of Trustees at our college was doing. So if they were holding their monthly meeting, we would hold an action because those are the decision makers at Clark College. Mm-hmm. So, and then we would, like I said, if on that professional development day, we took that opportunity to hold a solidarity event. So we didn't necessarily set forth a plan of escalating actions, even though we knew that that was the way to go to test capacity and to see how many of our members were sort of interested and able to come out and do solidarity actions. We knew that that was a good strategy, but we were so focused on building membership. We knew that that was really important. Like I said, I had contacted WEA organizers in the spring, and basically their points were build your membership up to 80%. We were at 30%. Wow. So that was enough of a task in and of itself. And then they said, build yourself a dream team or a strike team or a picket captain's team, whatever you want to call it. Build yourself a team that should be about 10% of your faculty, of your bargaining unit. So that would be about 50 people. So over the course of 6 months, we went from 30% to 80%. And then I did identify about 50 people. And that wasn't an easy task. You think you know who the leaders are going to be, but sometimes it takes a few or several trial and error efforts to find those right people who are going to reach your membership where they live.
Did WEA provide trainings for you, or did you go to community organizations to learn how to do these actions and organizing?
Right. So I went to some collective bargaining conferences with Washington Education Association. I also went to the Secrets for a Successful Organizer workshop held by the DSA.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, I listened to a webinar that was held by the author of No Shortcuts, and she was interviewing the LA strikers, and I took a lot of advice from that webinar. So, you know, I was pretty, I guess you could say, consumed over that 6 months to try to learn as much as possible. It was really interesting to learn how to do that. And ultimately, it's not that complicated. It's about getting the numbers and getting everybody on board with the same goal and turning that into a movement. So it's not easy, but it isn't complicated.
So tell us a little bit about what happened during the strike over the 3 days where you were able to ratchet up the pressure on the administration, and what kind of community support did you have, mm-hmm. and you know, from and students and other unions, well, also leading up to the strike.
Leading up to the strike, we would invite different unions to our solidarity action. So I'd invite ILWU workers.
Which is longshore.
Longshoremen. And they're always very present at solidarity actions. They bring really big signs, and they bring really big picketers. They make themselves very, like I said, present, and they look very strong. I was always really proud to have ILWU there supporting us. We also had our various K-12s there at our different events. We also had the Labor Council come and support. So I would go to the Labor Council every month and tell them what activities we were going to have that month and ask the different unions to come and support us. Yeah. And then I use social media as well, Facebook and Twitter, to advertise or to promote our different events. So that community support really had a significant impact on us, in the sense that, hey, we see that we're not alone here,
mm-hmm.
Because we're the only community college in Washington in that area. So you could kind of feel isolated in that sense, but we had so much support come to our different actions that made us feel really supported. When it comes to the strike itself, we had even more support. Everyone came out on the lines. They were bringing snacks to us. We had trucks pull up and just drop off water and snacks. We didn't even know who they were. They didn't need us to know who they were either. That's just how unions work. They were just there to help. They didn't need any recognition. They were truly our brothers and sisters there to give support in any way we needed. Our students actually came out to the picket lines as well, and that made a huge difference. The administration at one point was trying to turn the students against us by blaming us, making the students seem like victims. They weren't having it. They were out there on the lines with us. They were actually rolling, some students were actually rolling around a cart with snacks and hand warmers and hot chocolate. We have lots of pictures of students supporting us. And then specifically, the morning of our day of our strike at 7 a.m., the Board of Trustees had planned a meeting, and we could only assume that they were going to talk about filing an injunction against us to stop our strike. And in fact, that is what they were discussing. And when the Board of Trustees meets, they have to publicly announce that they're meeting. So they sent through email their meeting announcement. So we made sure to plan a rally around their meeting and welcome them as they pulled into the parking lot. Yes. And we ultimately we marched around that building that they were meeting in and called some of those trustees by name to hold them accountable for the strike. Somebody needed to be responsible for the strike. We had held a strike vote a month prior. I don't know how much more warning we could have provided, but our students were out of the classroom, teachers were out of the classroom, somebody needed to be held accountable. So we held that march around the administration's building and made sure that they knew that we were starting our strike. As well, during the same 2 days of our, or 3 days of our strike, we had candidates on campus who were there to apply for the president's position. So right now we have an interim president, right? And we had candidates on campus to do forums so that they could possibly be the next president. And we had in part planned our strike for that week so that we could interfere with that, that effort. At the same time, the Board of Trustees knew that we were going on strike. It seemed to us that the responsible thing for them would have been to change the dates of the forums, but they neglected to do so. However, one of the candidates came out to the strike lines with us both days that we were out there.
Right,
that
on.
Unfortunately, she probably won't be hired, but she did show her support. And while one of the candidates was in the building doing their forum, we also occupied that building and chanted outside. And from what I hear, they heard us inside. So we made our presence known everywhere that we could. And I believe that our numbers, our community support, the fact that everybody heard our voices literally and figuratively made for a quick strike.
Great. So how do you plan on enforcing the contract going forward?
With the help of our WEA staff.
Great.
So unfortunately, because we haven't been an active union for I'm not sure how many years, we haven't been enforcing the contract to the extent that we should. And so that's going to be something that we'll focus on. We're holding a grievance training a week from today, actually, to teach our faculty that, hey, you know, when the contract's not followed, there's a process. And we'll be showing them that process and encouraging people to get to know the contract more intimately so that we can make sure that everybody follows it.
Well, I would imagine that this strike has developed a number of people as leaders, and that those folks can then be the leaders, the shop stewards, whatever you call them, building reps, the folks that will be leading the enforcement of the contract.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk about how the strike is and this whole process is. I mean, you talked about more membership, but how has it like transformed the union, especially in terms of solidarity between the part-timers and the full-timers?
Right. Well, you know, there's still some work to do when it comes to solidarity between part-time and full-time, but we have come a long way. I think that they do finally trust that at least at least the current leadership is very committed to part-time prosperity.
Yeah.
You know, exploitation of anyone's not okay. And from my perspective, a union should help its least powerful members, that those folks who have the least voice and ability to be heard, ability to act, those are the ones that you help first, and everybody gets lifted. So
I'm sorry, we're gonna have to cut you off there because we're out of time.
Oh.
We have to wrap up.
You've
been listening to Labor Radio, and our guest has been Suzanne Sutherland, the president of the Clark College Association for Higher Education. This is Labor Radio every Monday night, 6 to 6:30. And stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
Thanks so much, Suzanne, for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is working with Beautiful Portland to collect socks and blankets for those who are sleeping outside this winter. There is a collection box in the lobby of KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, between Burnside and Ankeny. Donations are accepted Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad.